Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast, episode 301. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with the smooth and mellow Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
The skin soft Graham Thickens.
Love that blues guitar, baby.
And the guy who uses Downy on everything, Phil Wilson.
What the? Yeah.
Downy because it makes it smooth.
Smooth?
Yeah,
that's soft.
Soft, man. Soft. Okay, there we go.
You've been drinking this morning already, haven't you?
Oh, my God. Anyway.
Got your Courvoisier out.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's a Southern comfort voice.
Yeah, well, I'm the most interesting man in my home office right now, instead of in the world. So it doesn't he drink Courvoisier? No, he drinks something else. Anyway, Phil, I saw your photo in the net neutrality forum.
You did? Where'd you see that?
In the audience. The folks from Magnet 360, Dan Mallon.
He posted
some stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was there.
Yeah.
Kind of a waste of time.
Oh no, really?
What? Yeah, kind of.
Why? What happened?
Well, I mean, it was really more of a vehicle for, you know, basically to tout the, you know, Franken's position on net neutrality. Now, that's not to say I disagree with Franken's position on net neutrality, because I don't. But it was not exactly. If you wanted to go there to hear necessarily pros and cons or why net neutrality or why this path to net neutrality. No, that wasn't it.
Well, that's what I thought it would be.
What, sort of a discussion of the pros and cons?
Yeah.
Ha!
Oh, no.
Only supporters showed up, in other words?
Well, that's all that was on the panel.
So is our junior senator, is he all in on this FCC regulation stuff?
I'm assuming so.
I guess he is.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he's doing almost weekly emails to his constituents on being in favor of net neutrality, and here are some things you can do, and so on. So yeah, he's a huge supporter. Mm. Mark Cuban, the billionaire Mark Cuban. I love how they always call him the billionaire Mark Cuban, as though
isn't it Mark Cuban?
I think it was Cuban.
It's Cuban.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Let's call him Cuban.
That's what they call him on the Shark Tank. Is Cuban?
Okay.
Yeah.
Mark Cuban.
Yeah, that's what they call him. Yep.
All right. He says,
I kind of like Cuban. That's kind of cool.
like Colbert.
Like
yeah. But he says net neutrality will F everything up. And he used the F word.
Yep. He's right, too, actually.
Well, it depends on your position.
There was no opportunity to ask questions. It was really a presentation. So
Cuban's position is similar to mine, where, you know, any kind of regulation on the internet, we're casting a wary eye on. And it will stifle innovation, I think, on the internet. It'll do exactly the opposite of what everybody thinks that this will do. That's my prediction.
That's your prediction.
Okay.
That's it. Yep.
I don't necessarily agree. Again, but listen, I've seen what FCC regulation of the broadcast industry did with basically lifting caps on purchases. And, you know, we've got a very homogenized sort of broadcast system now, but at the same time, it kind of comes down to if the actual business is not going to regulate itself, then there is concern. And sometimes I don't necessarily have a problem with government regulating if the industry will not self-regulate. So,
well, but again, you know, the whole thing is that these companies, every company should be doing this. Every company should be doing the best thing they can for the company. And growing and doing the maximum they can for their shareholders and so on. So their interests lie with their company, not with the industry, not with having a level playing field. None of that stuff. They shouldn't care about that. They should care about their company. But to my point is just like this. We'll put a link to this GigaOm article about entrepreneurs embrace net neutrality plan. Well, there's not a lot of them, but there are some names. And one of the things about it is that, you know, we haven't even seen yet what the ISPs could do. And I mean the mobile companies as well, what they could do, once they are in a position to control what goes over their networks, because they're still not really doing it because they don't want to, you know, rattle their sabers too much, because they know that Obama will veto any bills that come up and so on. And that's why, you know, it depends on who wins the race next time for president. But this, because it could go either way. But if the Republicans end up with a president, then you'll see the Comcast and Verizon and AT&T's and everybody, they're just going to flip every switch they can to make sure that they're the primary winner in anything that goes over their networks. So that's what this whole thing's about. It's just to make sure that the playing field remains level.
I would agree. That's my take on it. That's my feeling on it. As I say, I don't disagree with Senator Franken's viewpoint on this. But you know, that said, it was really not a
discussion forum.
Well, yeah. It wasn't a discussion forum. It really wasn't worth the time to go to.
It was grandstanding.
I don't know if it's grandstanding, and I'm not sure exactly what Magnet 360 gets out of it. I think it was more a function of not necessarily Magnet 360, but the other business organization that was there. You know, they had a couple of people there from, or they had three or four people that head up businesses here, you know, that one was a sign company. It was like, you know, if we don't have net neutrality, my photos, images of my signs can't get across the internet. It's like, what? Yeah, yeah. I know. It was like, you know, so it's like that,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I applaud anybody that puts together any kind of situation where you can, you know, actually meet people that, or hear people speak that are actually impact, you know, the way you and I do business or the way you and I live. And I think that anytime you have a chance to sit down and interact with a senator, it's great, but that just didn't happen here. So, and again, I don't disagree with his viewpoint. I don't disagree with the panel's viewpoint as a whole, but it really was not a forum, as it were. It was a presentation.
We have a better forum here on the Minovate Gang podcast.
Well, yeah, sometimes, except when you take the wrong stance, Graham.
We're equally balanced.
Tim and I know where it's at. Yeah, we're I think it's largely an imagined problem, and you know, and it's all this what if stuff. And do you really want a government agency to control this powerhouse of innovation? You know, with thousands upon thousands of bureaucrats, you know, it'll turn into a nightmare. You know, that's. That's basically where we are, Tim, right?
Yep.
If it happened. Oh, I mean, it's you tread really carefully and it will be a long time before anything really does happen, I think. You know, I don't think we're looking at anything happening in the near term here, despite all the efforts of Obama and our friend Franken.
Well, the thing that concerns me is that Wheeler, who's the FCC chairman, came out of – he was a lobbyist for the cable industry. Yep. So for him to propose a major shift that doesn't benefit the cable industry, and they seem to have lined up behind this along with the president, it seems to me like – what we're going to find at the end of this is the government will be determining what they consider to be lawful content, and that we will have to be paying licenses to be podcasters and probably bloggers, and that innovation will be stifled and we'll have fewer choices for internet access, right. not more. And we'll be paying more too.
That's right. And the cable companies will have their monopoly and they'll be happy, you know.
Yep.
It'll be like the old Ma Bell, you know. That's where this thing has been described as where it could end up, you know? So yeah. it's a very wild, contentious discussion going on. That is for sure.
And where do you fall on global warming, guys?
Oh God, let's stop. I'm leaving.
I mean, it sounds very much like, well, no,
this is
a perceived problem. I love you. As soon as you said this is a perceived problem, I'm thinking, wow, where do you guys fall on global warming?
Well, how can we possibly know? I'm seriously, how can we possibly know with having 100 years plus or minus of inaccurate measurements of the Earth's temperature. How can we know?
Okay, kids. Let's go on to social media breakfast, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
Number 75. let's go past this because otherwise we're going to stay in the rat hole. You know what? I perceive.
Oh my God.
Phil, stop. We're going to be four old men playing chess with veins popping out of our necks, screaming at each other someday. And let's just wait for that time. Anyway, so registers.
Can I vote for checkers? I'm not a big chess fan. So,
So who registered for SMBMSP and went?
I registered
and I was unable to make it because the traffic was crazy that morning. And by the time I got close to downtown, it was already 8:45 and I left before.
I left before seven. Yeah, so I heard it was pretty bad. My son went to the U in the morning, but
it was which I'm sorry about because I very much like going to the social media breakfast. And, all I can say is I'm glad that I have begun paying because now I don't feel so bad if, you know, I register and can't make it. It's like, at least they're getting some money from me. So.
Yeah.
So
what was their topic this time?
It was video, wasn't it?
I don't know. I didn't get the name.
It was at Space 150. So I was unable to make it, but I know that they had a good crowd.
Yeah, it was visuals that compel and influence. And it was really about photos and this guy, Brock Davis, who's the creative director at Space 150, is an award-winning multidisciplinary artist. And so went through the whole visual thing. And you know what? And here's what's funny about this. So I have a client that right now has 1,136 blog posts. And I would bet 90% of them are text. There are no photos. No graphics, nothing.
Oh, my God.
And so we ended up going through this whole exercise, and they have somebody right now creating photos and thumbnails for every single post. Because it just looks horrible. It looks horrible. Yeah. I mean, you know, nobody wants to sit there and read a bunch of text. And, you know, the photo pulls you in. And I think it works great. So,
gosh, if my typepad blog were all text, it'd be a lot easier to get over to WordPress.
Oh,
It's the graphics that are the problem, right, Steve?
Yeah,
when
it is.
When I go to convert that.
I told you I'd help you.
Yeah, I know. All you have to do is. God, I'm going to take you up on it, too. I feel guilty having you have to take time to help me, but I know it's a bitch.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do it. I get tired of paying $15 a month for that lame old typepad.
Yeah, I'll charge you $14.50, and then I'll host it for you.
$14.50
a month.
I like that. It's good.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, because I do probably need a hosted WordPress blog, not a WordPress.com, right?
Yep. Well, you could do WordPress.com if you just wanted to point your domain there, but we'll talk offline.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because we'll I think that's good. Okay. So,
Best Buy.
Yeah. Tim, did you put this in or Graham?
I did. You talked about it a little bit last week, I think. Yep. I heard about it.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I listened to the podcast. When I'm not on, I think you touched on it a little
bit. Thanks for listening, Tim.
But I saw the story, and so I said, you know what? We'll stick it in.
You know, it's funny how they're going out to Seattle where the e-commerce mojo resides. You know, if they can't beat Amazon, maybe they'll hire some of their ex-employees.
Yeah, no, that's.
Well, I'm sure.
You know, Target and Walmart are out in Silicon Valley area or mm-hmm. San Francisco area, mm-hmm. and so it makes sense that Best Buy would go someplace different. And being right down the street from Amazon, it will be good to poach employees, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. That's a great idea. To do that.
And they said no one from here would be transferred out there. It's going to be all new employees.
Well, and you know what else? I don't know if you guys know this, but you know, my son's a huge video gamer and wants to be a producer of video games. And so we looked at a college up there that does video game courses. And it's really hard to get into and it's expensive and all of that. But one of the things that I did not know where there are something like 130 game development companies in Seattle.
Wow.
And obviously because Microsoft and the Xbox and all of that, but but they're also building for multiple platforms. And so the talent pool up there is pretty huge.
I'll
so
bet.
This will be a, so yeah. And plus Amazon with e-commerce and everything else, I think Best Buy could really do well there. And it's not, you know, it's not as expensive as trying to do something in the Bay Area.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
It's a mistake.
Why?
It is. It's a mistake. I speak from experience. The fact that BuzzFeed, a company that is growing and expanding rapidly, chose to stake a claim in the Midwest for its talent. You know, you're abandoning talent here in Minneapolis to concentrate on, you know, a remote location. And I don't quite understand it. I'm glad for it because there's less competition in the talent pool here. So God love you. Go for it, Best Buy. But I think that's, you know, I see them kind of squander away talent here in Minneapolis, and it's
really,
yeah, I just, well, I don't, yeah. I'm not a big fan. So,
you know, it probably comes down to some executive has a vacation home out there. You know what I mean? I mean, who knows?
I think it's probably more relationship oriented. I mean, they want to be up the street from Amazon. They want to be close to Microsoft. They want to be closer to the Bay Area. That's fine. But, you know, they tried very hard to work towards innovating, you know, here in Minneapolis, and they blew it, I think. So,
well, you know what it really is? They want to smuggle those Canadians across the border.
That's it.
Mm.
It's much, much better than trying to get them from Winnipeg up here.
Mm.
All those e-commerce guys up in Winnipeg.
But yeah, anyway, right. I think it's a necessarily, you know, I'm not going to fault anybody for trying something new because, you know, BuzzFeed decided to get out of New York to do their recruiting and develop their tech hub. But it's, have fun. We'll see you guys later.
Didn't BuzzFeed go to Seattle too, though, or won't they? Or
BuzzFeed's in LA for BuzzFeed Motion Pictures, but
that figures.
And then we're also in New York, London, Australia, Japan, places like that, but that's more content focused and bureau oriented. But so
interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, that's global world, you know? It is a global world, but I don't necessarily think the grass ain't always greener. So,
Well, Best Buy's got a lot of money to throw around for the commerce side of things. Wow.
If you dip your toe in that pool, you better have a really thick wallet because there's a lot of competition for talent in that town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No question.
Anywho, there you go.
Well, hey, I wanted to.
Slow warming thing, though, guys. Let's
Will you stop?
It's climate change, by the way, because things are actually getting colder.
Yeah, whatever.
So it's cooling now, so they have to change the name.
I have an idea. Let's deflect from the actual.
That's why they call it climate change, not global warming. And that's why the shift in the jet stream is causing all kinds of things like a lack of snow here and more snow in the east and blah, blah, blah. So
it's all right. We're in a cooling phase now, not a warming phase.
I'm going to leave the room, you guys.
According to our esteemed colleagues, it's not an issue. So don't worry about it.
So, all right. So getting back to the real news here.
There's a lot of talent on the street from Target, right, Tim?
Yeah, and getting more so, especially the Canada stuff. I just stuck this in. This is also a story that we probably would have talked about last week had I been here. But it's that Target Canada, the shutdown is, you know, basically a bankruptcy of that business. And there are a lot more suppliers in the Twin Cities that supplied Target Canada that are kind of holding the bag, as it were. It's kind of sad, but I can see both sides of this. It's sad for these businesses because they're not going to get paid, or they'll get paid, 10 cents on the dollar by bankruptcy court or something like that. But they still want to, you know, work with Target because it's a big customer. So
yeah, they don't want to get too,
they don't want to get on their shape. Bad side.
Yeah, exactly. Because then they're done.
They're kind of in a funny position here.
Yeah.
But it's too bad.
Too bad. Yeah, it is too bad.
Have to take a lot of merchandise back, right, from all the stores that closed.
Well, downtown Minneapolis, across from the courthouse over by the old building, I forget what it's called, there used to be an outlet there called Sween Lundeen that had a jewelry store and also had an electronics distribution.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those guys? Anyway, and all the cops and judges and everybody bought there and so on. Well, one of the guys that owned it, I think it was Sween, or maybe it was Lundin, I don't remember. But anyway, came up with this concept called the slacker. And it was a hanger that you could lift up this thing and it would keep your slacks from sliding off. And they got a verbal commitment from the buyer at Target and they ordered 35,000 of these things. Anyway, so now fast forward, it's, you know, in the 80s and the guy that was working there, I knew, and he brought me downstairs and he goes, I got to show you something. There were literally barrels and barrels and barrels of these hangers. They hadn't thrown them out because they were still trying to sell them somewhere. Oh my God. So, you know, it is tough to be a small business and deal with a giant because, you know, you're just a pimple on their backside.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's tough stuff.
They'll snuff you out. Yeah. If you don't watch out.
So this is a cool Kickstarter project. There was an article in the Twin Cities Business Journal about this startup and they tried to raise 20 grand and they raised 31,000 to date. And it's who put this in here? What is this? It's a charging cable that does charging faster.
Yeah. And plus it has all these different heads that it works with, you know, all the iOS devices and all of the Android and everything. So the idea is similar to one that years ago, I remember I had, where you would buy the charging cable, and I had one in my car. Mm-hmm. And then you, every time you bought a new phone, you would have to get one of these heads that changed the connector. But the main part of the unit itself is still the same. So it's the same sort of idea. It's just a kind of an updated version of it.
Well, with one twist, if you look at, and we'll put a link in the show notes for everybody listening, but if you look at the Kickstarter program, they say what's included with the cable. And as you look down, there's an audio connector. There is just a regular USB, so you can use it as a USB connector. There's also HDMI micro and HDMI. So if you had an HDMI port in your laptop, for example, you could plug it into a TV in your hotel room or something along those lines. So it's kind of this multi-use cable, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's good for travelers, frequent travelers that have multiple devices and don't want to carry multiple charging cables.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they should send one to Martha Stewart. Remember, she was the one who famously got up and had this rat's nest of cables that she pulled out of her briefcase and held it up at this, at like the Web 2.0 summit and said, you know, why can't you guys get your act together?
Well, it's better than it used to be. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's
right.
It's pretty much Apple and everybody else now.
Right.
Yeah. So everybody else has adopted the micro USB and Apple has their own, you know, Lightning at this point.
Right, right.
But they'll change it to something else at some other point, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, Julio had that interesting article.
So they're based in.
What?
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 Huh? What was that, Graham? It's Graham.
I said this company is based in Clarkfield. Where in the heck is Clarkfield, Minnesota? Never heard of it.
Wasn't that made but famous by that monkey song, Last Strange to Clarkfield?
Yeah, there you go.
That's it.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Janulus is the name of the company.
Well, of course, it's in Yellow Medicine County.
That's what the Wikipedia says.
You know, I mean, come on, Graham.
Population was 863 in 2010 census.
Wow.
Wow.
So this is a lot, this is large industry for
this is, yeah, it's probably one of the top chamber of commerce companies.
Well, it's out by Montevideo.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so,
where's that Montevideo? What is that?
It's Montevideo. They pronounce
it Uruguay. The state.
It's like Des Plaines down in Chicago, down in Illinois. When we first moved down there.
And the Arkansas River in Kansas.
When we first moved down to Chicago, when my wife and I got married, I'm talking to somebody and I go, yeah, well, I went to Des Plaines. And they were like, what? I go, yeah, you know that
hurts?
it's over by Rosemont. Oh, you mean Des Plaines? No, that's not how you pronounce it. Yeah, it is. It's like, oh man. Anyway, so now I guess we should pronounce it Julio Ojeda Zapata. Julio, our good buddy, had a great article about making social media a virtual reality. And talked
this is another
about
another wacky idea from Chuck Olson.
Yeah, but But he's great.
Did you see the wall, the interactive game that he put together?
No, that, have not seen it yet.
It was the original piece that he did, which was
at Future Cave.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was incredible. I did.
It was so cool.
So. Yeah. Well, he does some really wild stuff. I mean, you know, you could consider that he was one of the first video bloggers that popped up on anybody's radar screen. He had some early articles about what he was doing and so forth. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's an interesting
concept. I don't fully understand what he's doing here. It's something to do with Oculus Rift and some sort of gaming.
But it also incorporates
as a social media layer to it. Yeah.
Well, see, here's what I find interesting. If you guys remember who actually did Second Life.
Well, I had an account and I did some stuff on there, but it gets boring very quickly.
It did get boring very quickly. But also at one point though, they had somebody had built on an island, had built a virtual trade show. And you could walk through this trade show and you could turn and you could look at things. And if somebody, an actual human, was there with their avatar, you could actually type in questions. And that was a pain. But then when they incorporated audio into Second Life, now all of a sudden you could sit and talk with them. That was pretty cool. Because then I could start to see, you know, the opportunities. The only problem was, you know, when they started doing lectures and stuff in Second Life, and especially interviews with that woman, who is making them, you know, $800,000 a year selling goods in Second Life and all of that. And she's being interviewed and there are all these avatars in the audience or people are watching her. And all of a sudden somebody had hacked it. And these marital aides go streaming by from, you know, it was like, oh, come on. So anyway,
does anybody still do Second Life? I mean, Second Life's still there, but
yeah, apparently I haven't been on it in a long time.
Yeah, me neither. Oh my gosh, it's probably been a year since I've even looked.
A year?
Yeah.
It's not been that long.
Yeah, that's a long time since you, haven't looked. But anyway, so that's the thing with this particular technology is we'll put the link in the show notes. If you scroll down to the bottom, it shows a visual prototype of being able to map Instagram images onto essentially a wraparound wall. So, you know, a lot of this VR stuff though, it's still just too far out. I think we should work on holodecks. Anyway,
there it is.
There it is. There's the holodeck.
There's the monthly reference to holodeck.
That's right.
Ding.
I want one.
We've punched our ticket.
Yeah. Okay. So,
Keep an eye on what Chuck does, cause he does really interesting stuff. And I think that, I love seeing stuff that is far out. I mean, it is a long way out. There's not, I don't think you're going to be looking at a business application here anytime soon, but I think it's a great concept.
Right. Right.
You'll see it in some Hollywood movie though.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Yep. There you go.
You know, as like a representation of the future. Or maybe it's in CSI. Maybe it's this thing will show up on CSI Cyber, which is starting up next week.
Oh.
Yeah,
I saw that.
Well, and he's demoing this technology at a conference called Launch in San Francisco. I'm not sure when that is, but there's actually a company he's formed called Visual behind this thing. So
yeah, it's the actual piece is called Launch. So
right.
Yeah.
Talking
about maybe other top stories of the week, I put one right at the very top, even though this story actually broke the week before. We didn't spend much time on it last week. And there's something kind of interesting about it that I thought was worth discussing just briefly. So it's about the bank hackers that stole millions via malware. And the estimate is 300 million to 1 billion, which I think is quite a delta. But, the hackers are unknown and so on and so forth. The kicker is just like a prediction that I read back in, I don't know, the late 70s, early 80s, about how someday, and maybe it was Carl Sagan actually, someday people flying to the moon or going up to the space station or going into space won't even merit a front page article. And I remember reading that and thinking, no, there's not a chance. No, come on. What? And now, you know, the rocket goes off and, you know, the space shuttle went up and, you know, it'd be on page 8. And that's how it is with this. I mean, have you guys seen a lot of articles about this?
No, it's become every day.
Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah. That's the story. I think behind the story is the fact that people are getting jaded to these massive, because it's not, you know, okay, it's not really affecting me, I guess. You know, yeah, they're losing all this money, but hey, whatever. That it's almost meriting no attention because it's so frequent and so often. And do you think that's a problem? I mean, Graham, do you bank online even at home?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I mean, does it concern you at all?
But with a minor bank that no one would ever mess with, you know.
Right.
BMO.
A guy named Ed.
Yeah, Ed's bank. Ed's bank. Yeah.
Ed's mattress.
Yeah. Small obscure banks are going to be a growth market here, you know, because the hackers won't even know about them.
That's right.
Yeah, but they're probably all running Windows.
Banking out of the trunk of some guy's car. That's what we're doing.
It's a growth business.
Oh, man.
So saying stuff, we have reach fatigue.
Yes. I mean, I think that happens with every kind of news story. I mean, except the Kardashians. For some reason, the Kardashians go away.
Oh, but please.
I think
you
it's
had to bring that up, didn't you?
Sorry. But I think it's, I think you're right. I think that is the story, is that this is slipping from the front page. It happens so often.
Yeah. And that's a problem.
Especially
for guys like me that do a security tip of the week, because people are probably, oh, now's my time to go to the bathroom.
I disagree. I think it's an opportunity for you to shine here, Steve.
Oh, there you go. All right. Okay.
That's right. But that's coming up later.
That is. Hey, by the way, Johnny Ive, that was a good article in the New Yorker magazine.
Yeah, it's a long one, wasn't it?
It's one of the read laters, but the shape of things to come. And some people are characterizing this as an interesting peek behind the curtain.
Well, it's an interesting, very orchestrated, you know, kind of peek behind the curtain.
That's how it felt. Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is what you want. This is the way you want him portrayed, that he's calling up Bono and Chris Martin from Coldplay and hanging out with Stephen Fry, you know.
Right, like, right.
These are all of his buds.
Yeah.
So true. Yep. So
very
true.
Much shaped by the PR people at Apple, I'm sure.
You think?
You think? Was the gist of it that he's so focused now, or so excited about the luxury market. That's kind of his thing, right?
Well, yeah. But, you know, when I read this, is what it came across to me as is that everybody is lauding Tim Cook and his efficiency. And the biggest thing missing in a lot of people's view is the heart and soul of Apple, which was Steve Jobs. And that's what this felt like, was that this felt like they want to
an attempt to
position him as the legacy soul of the company. That's how it felt.
Yeah, that's so, probably what the strategy was.
Yeah,
makes total sense to me.
Yeah, I just wish he'd invite me to his house in San Francisco.
Well, which one thing though? The one he's living in temporarily, or the big, you want to go to the one refurbing in Pacific Heights.
Yeah.
Just down the street from Robert Stevens, I suppose.
Maybe.
That's where he lives.
Yeah.
Well,
they probably hang out.
Yeah, they hang out. You know, Billionaires Row, you know.
But one of the things you come away with is that it is the coolest place to work inside that design studio. They just get to do whatever the heck they want, pretty much.
Yeah, and no one's left in like 12 years or something. I mean, it's like, the ultimate design job on the planet.
So do you guys think, I mean, there's been a ton of these articles out and rumors. Do you think that Johnny Ive will be driving a new Apple car in 2020?
No, he'll have his driver drive him.
Okay, all right.
You know,
he'll drive the limo version.
Yeah. The one thing I'm glad about all this Apple iCar talk is maybe now the the idiots will shut up about Apple buying Tesla. I mean, how many more people have to come out with this, you know?
Right.
What a dumb idea, you know? There was even one sort of leading VC guy, Mike Maples, that came out and posted about it. Apple should buy Tesla right now, you know? It's like, go away, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
Maybe it'll, maybe that talk will finally be put to rest, you know? Because it sounds like they're pretty damn serious about it's building.
Such a wacky idea, though. You know, I can see them. I can see them doing a TV, but it's such a low margin business. It's the same story here. This is even wackier though, because it's in a totally different industry that has high barriers to entry and all sorts of
and a ton of regulation.
And it takes 7 years to build a new car model is the standard time frame.
Right.
And yet there's talk about by 2020 they're going to have a car. Well. That's a lot less than 7 years, you know.
Yeah. Maybe I can believe that they're doing a lot in the auto industry for electronics and whatnot in dash stuff. But I just find it very hard to believe that they're going to actually do a physical car. But if they did, it would be a really cool one.
Yeah. Well, there's so many platforms, you know, you can adopt from other manufacturers. It isn't like you're literally building a car from the ground up. You're, you know, it's a supply chain thing. And by God, they know the supply chain thing pretty well. So
if Johnny Ive is going to design a car, though, he's going to want to have complete control over the body look of the thing.
Oh,
that's
why
he drives that Bentley. Is it? He wants a car that looks, you know, very clean like that.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll be something like that. So it'll be different than Tesla, which basically just gets bodies from Lotus and has them, you know, sent over and sticks all their guts in it. It'll be probably be the other way around where it's Apple does the body and then they'll probably get, you know, Chrysler or somebody to build them the insides, you know?
Yep. That's what they'll do. I totally agree with that. That's a very good
maybe
point.
They'll buy one of the big car companies. Let's see who, like Chrysler would be one that they could buy. Cause well, I think Fiat is looking to get out of that. So they could probably pick them up.
Well, the only thing I want to put in here in the show notes is a link to an article about electric vehicles and will we run out of lithium before we run out of oil? And there's been a lot of discussion about all of the devices in the world, you know, smartphones and tablets and blah, 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 everything using all these lithium ion batteries. And now with automobiles driving forward, no pun intended, with lithium, you know, is there going to be a massive shortage of lithium? And so, you know,
and what do all the people do with depression too? I mean, do they just stop taking their pills?
Yeah, they don't need it anymore. Yeah, they should start.
It's not going to be good.
Oh, they should start jogging. And anyway,
they should start jogging.
Yeah.
Dr. Steve's
tip of the week. Dr. Steve's tip of the week. There we go.
Don't take your lithium, boys and girls.
Yeah.
They should go into the banking business. It's a growth market.
Yep. Hey, good find on this HTTP2. There's a new version.
Over this one, Steve.
Yeah. Well, I read one article on it, and then I kind of just dismissed it, and then I forgot about it. and so that, you know, there's Google's been trying to get a new protocol going called Speedy, S-P-D-Y, and Speedy has not been adopted by anybody really outside of Google. And Google cares deeply about speeding up the web because the more latency there is in the web, and that's why they're pushing people that want SEO rankings for their websites to have very fast loading homepages, websites overall, because the more that they can compress that latency and the faster it goes, the less hardware and the less bandwidth they have to consume to be able to be Google and offer all the stuff they do, right? So they have a real economic incentive to speed up the web and get everybody else to speed it up. And so now HTTP2 coming in seems to be a significant move forward because everybody seems to be jumping on this at once.
Yep. It's a win for Google because most of Speedy is in this. So.
Yeah. Well, HTTP, I mean, when was it invented? I mean, when was the protocol ratified? Like in the late 80s?
Probably.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a little long in the tooth, but we're not going to get into all the technical stuff, but there's new methods of compressing and decompressing stuff as it flows across the web. So, you know, if you ever looked at, for those listening, if you ever looked at the source of a web page and you look at all the code and all the things loading and the way that they're loading and the way that browsers handle stuff, I mean, there's a lot of connections. There's a lot of stuff going on. And you probably remember when it used to be the discussion about, oh, we had a million hits on our website. Well, okay, a hit is just one of those connections, and building a homepage might be 500 hits. And so hits is not the right thing, and that's why everybody started moving into page views. But all of those hits, all those little things that have to load, are all different connections to the web server. And some of them can happen simultaneously, but boy, is it inefficient in comparison to what it could be. And so this is a cool standard. It's going to speed everything up for all of us. So thanks for putting that in.
Yep.
All right.
Now the tinfoil hat story of the week.
That's what we should call it.
Notice how we kind of pushed it near to the bottom.
Yeah. Well, okay. So it's called the articles of the Great Sim Heist, and it's on The Intercept. What's interesting is that as these journalists that have access to the Snowden documents from 2013,
As they start to actually read
them. There's like 1.2 million they've got to pour through, but the breach of a company that makes most of the SIMs for mobile devices, there was a malware inserted, and there was a breach there, and the intelligence agencies obtained the keys to the SIM cards, which means even if something is encrypted over the wireless network, guess what? It can be decrypted in the middle without a problem, and nobody knows. Because if you've got the keys, you can siphon off all that data. And, you know, that's the signal intelligence directive of the NSA and the British equivalent, the GCHQ, is they want to be able to get everything everywhere in the world. And
On the Apple and some of the other devices, the SIM is where the secure element is stored, I think, for your, you know, your Touch ID, what do they call it? Apple Pay stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's...
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm pretty sure that's stored. That's where the secure element is. It's on the SIM.
Now, but which, this Gemalto, the company that makes these SIMs in Europe, they're in France and the Netherlands. I just saw a mention of Verizon, Vodafone, and China Mobile. Are they making the SIMs for AT&T and T-Mobile?
They make them for almost everybody.
Really?
And now that, you know, we're going to LTE, even carriers that were on CDMC, you know, that didn't use SIMs like Verizon and Sprint, they're actually going to SIM cards now. So pretty much every phone will have a SIM card at some point. And this why this is a big deal.
And this company literally like is the only supplier?
No, but it's the biggest one, and most of them. They said, 450 wireless networks, including AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, and Sprint.
Yeah, they produce...
Our clients.
They produce some 2 billion SIM cards every year. So this is... this is unbelievable. I mean, it literally is. My security tip, I think, next week will be how to be secure on the internet. Number one, turn off the internet. Number two, throw away your mobile device. Number three, buy a typewriter.
Buy a typewriter. Go live in the Northwoods.
Right. Number four, read the Unabomber Manifesto.
Yeah, right.
Because he was mostly right.
He was mostly right.
The bomb part was a little bit rough, but other than that, he was kind of right on.
Yeah. Well, continuing in this same vein.
Yes, and we will.
This actually, I've been reading about this a lot. And what's funny is that this is yet another story that was broken by a Russian security company, Kaspersky Lab, based in Moscow. And I've always been a little bit wondering about Kaspersky and how much trust one can put in there. But it's they are just rigorous about uncovering things and revealing things, and they've got security software and everything else. But this article is about the NSA. I'm laughing. I shouldn't be laughing. Has figured out how to hide spying software deep within hard drives made by Western Digital, Seagate, Toshiba, and other top manufacturers. It's yep. like, no, you got to be shitting me. I mean, so now even if you encrypt all your data on the drive, are they able to decrypt the drive?
Given enough time, yes.
Oh, so, my God. Yeah. So even if they... Even if you lock down your laptop and everything's encrypted on it, they can pull the drive. And I'm just wondering what the software will do in terms of decryption.
Well, I'm sure if you did put on encryption on your drive, it would make it harder. It would take them longer to crack. But it looks like they have backdoors into everything, and they're able to, you know, probably get to it. It probably would take some time to do it.
One question, Steve, is this spinning disk drive only or SSD?
I think it's all of them.
Oh, damn.
It didn't say.
It didn't say, but yeah.
Is the disk firmware, that's pretty much the same on SSD as it is on a spinning drive. I think the firmware part is. Mm. So it's a BIOS code of the drive. So I bet it's very similar. So
one of the things that we haven't talked a lot about is our pal Darren Klum.
You
know, who's done the computing company down in Rochester. And then he had Cram, where he had taken this technology and put it on a device where you could secure everything, movies, and they were pitching it to movie studios and so on. Well, they've morphed into a company called Secured 2, and basically what Secured 2 does is you can have multiple providers. So on a consumer basis, even though they're not positioning themselves yet for consumers, really, if you're a consumer, you could have 100 gigs at OneDrive, 100 gigs at Dropbox, 100 gigs at BoxNet, you know, whatever. And then when you backed up your data, basically what Secured 2 does is it shreds your data and it puts pieces and parts in all three of those data centers. And the only way that anybody could ever, I mean, even if they decrypted part of it on one of the drives, they'd be able to see nothing and recreate nothing. And so the software back at the ranch, back at your computer, is the only one that can reassemble everything. And it's just a fascinating technology and direction. And this startup I'm watching really closely because I really want to see where they're.
Steve, give us an update. Has he raised a significant amount of money, and who's he trying to sell it to? Is it military, defense?
It's corporate America predominantly.
Okay.
And in the military and Department of Defense, but it's really about securing any customer's data. Yeah, he hasn't revealed yet what they've got invested, but the chairman and COO is Jim Hanlon, who's done a lot of stuff with Fortune 50 companies, and Pete Berkland, who of course we know well, used to be with Rainsource Capital, General Tim White. He's former Brigadier General of the U.S. Air Force. And I mean, you really got to look at this page of people. He, of course, has Jim Lehman, who's the golf. He represents golf pros because his brother, Tom Lehman, the golf pro, is also an advisor. But anyway, so it's just a really interesting group of older white guys.
He's got a heck of a board, an advisory board.
This is going to be pretty amazing as a company and technology. And we'll just have to see how they are able to put it out there. They also claim they can not only do data shredding and put it in all these data centers, but they also can shrink the data by 90%. They've got a patent that dramatically reduces the size required for storage. So this could really turn the tide on, on corporations getting into cloud computing, because they're not going to be as nervous that they're going to have a breach and be broken into if this stuff is shredded and is stored all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think we should wake Phil up.
I'm here. Don't worry. I'm listening.
Yeah. You know why, Phil? Because it's time for.
Is it time for the horses? Release the horses!
I think so.
Oh no. The horse is out of the barn. Must be time for Steve's security tip of the week.
All right, so lots of
at all the horses.
Lots of horses for you guys. All right, so my security tip of the week. So my security tip of the week is how to keep your kids safe online. And the number one technology is your voice, is your mouth. To sit down and talk with the kids and set rules. A lot of people, like we used to do, is keep your computer in an open area so that you can look at it, or position the kids' desk in their room so that the computer is faced out toward the door so you can walk in and see what they're doing. And some people, even though some people consider, hey, I'll just set up a separate user account on my computer, be very, very careful of that, because my sister's son, when he was a young teen, did in fact get the computer itself infected with malware. And then she ended up having her identity stolen. So,
hello.
Yeah, on their own account, because the entire computer was nailed. But anyway, so the number one tip, and this is really simple, even though you can do this at the router level in your house, a lot of people don't have the skills for that. So I'm going to put a link in the show notes to something called OpenDNS. They've got a free home version of OpenDNS for parental controls. And you can go there, sign up, follow the instructions. It's very simple to set up. And now you'll have a dashboard, and you will have access to filtering and security. And you can even, I think you have to buy the version where you can actually set up times so that certain computers can't access the internet after a certain time. So if you guys go to bed, mom and dad go to bed, and the kid knows, well, it's 11 o'clock, I'll flip the computer on and do all the stuff I can't do when mom and dad are around. You could actually have that thing turned off at 10 o'clock at night and so forth. But it's a free service, and is much easier than either doing it at the Wi-Fi router level in your home or even doing it at the computer level, because most of us have more than one device in the house. You've got smartphones, you've got all kinds of different things. So that's my tip of the week.
Good one.
Nice. Very nice. I like it. I'm simple, glad. Basic.
Yeah. Now if we could just get to figure out how to do it remotely so we could turn Phil off so that when he's doing bad stuff on the net.
I always do. What was it again? I always do bad. That's it. I always do bad stuff.
The worst thing that Phil does these days is look at listicles way too much.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
I actually look at more news than anything, because we're working on a new news app. So I look at news a lot more than listicles now.
Huh.
So. Wow, okay. Well, so anyway,
are you looking at cool things of the week?
I am looking at cool things of the week.
So what's yours?
This one is, I kind of, when we start preparing for this, I'll just start looking for cool stuff. Because it's my one time to just look for cool stuff. So I've discovered Doob, D-O-O-B.
This is a Colorado marijuana company?
Yeah. Right, yeah.
This is a step into 3D. Now, what this is basically a 3D photo booth, really, is really what it is. So you can, it's now available in Santa Monica and in New York, but you walk in and you basically get a 3D printed selfie. So you can get these little small size. What now?
It's like a little model of you.
It is a little model
of you. That's actually really cool.
And you can get them.
This is the creepiest thing I've seen all week, though.
You can get this in various sizes, from the buddy size to the diva size.
From 4 inches to 14 inches. Right. I will tell you, I think these things are freaking awesome.
Aren't they cool?
These are really cool.
So And I think I was scrolling through the site, and they also seem to have put together a deal with Uniqlo. So if you get a Uniqlo store anywhere near you, or you happen to be traveling overseas, that would be the place
to
go.
Nicely done.
So I like this. This is the Dube. So you can get Dubed if next time you're in New York or Santa Monica.
This is a great new way for Kim Kardashian to do her selfies.
Crap. There you go.
There you go. Yeah. He would get a diva though.
Well, I think it'd be nice if you could use that, you know, make them into an eraser, because then you could erase stuff with her butt. You know? If you're using a pencil, that is. Anyway, I know. Okay, Tim, your cool thing, buddy boy.
The Beam, which is a Kickstarter project, which has already passed its funding goal, but it still has 30 days to go. And basically what it is it's a Pico projector that looks like
looks like a strobe light for a camera almost.
It does. And it plugs into or screws into a light socket. So you can basically use this on any, you know, light socket, and it projects, you know, whatever it is. So this is not like a super duper projector. And the bad news is it costs $400, but it is really cool looking. And they have a lot of different use cases, which are not just, you know, watching movies on it, which would probably not be the best quality, but you could certainly do it. And they have iOS and Android apps that allow you to you know, project stuff from your phone, so you could stream videos or show various apps on your phone. And it's just a cool thing.
I like this thing a lot. Yeah,
that's very cool.
Yeah, the only thing I found a little bit, a little bit of a downside is it is expensive. It's not super cheap. If it was like $250, this would be like, wow, this is a cool thing.
So if you pledge $5, you don't get a new Beam.
No, out. No, you support Beam though.
Yes, and you support Beam.
If you do, $25, you get it's $65, you get the hoodie. That hoodie looks really cool too.
Well, how much is that? 3M had a little mobile projector of some kind. How much was that?
I think that was about $350, something like that. But it was quite a bit bigger. It was quite a bit bigger, and that's the one that came with the streaming stick from Roku. That's how started. Was on that product,
right?
So it's probably that quality, but it's a good idea. And what they show in their video is that this is like hanging down, and so you could like project videos as you're cooking of, you know, presumably how-to videos of how to cook. Onto your, you know, the counter there next to your cooking thing.
Very cool. So, and Graham buddy.
Well, you know, my cool thing was going to be Apple stock, which closes at 125 and a half.
That is pretty cool.
Only a half buck short of my prediction for the year on our prediction show.
Year ain't over, dude. Year ain't over.
I way undershot at 130, you know. But anyway, in the Apple vein, I discovered via my friend Randy Guys, you know, our friend Pixelated.
Yep.
This AstroPad that is Mac and iPad drawn together. It's your iPad as a professional graphics tablet. So you can use all the Mac creative tools you know and love, like Photoshop, with the touch experience of your iPad. And it supports most styluses. It's really cool. But the other really neat thing is it's a couple of ex-Apple engineers that came up with this, one in San Francisco and one in Minneapolis.
That's right.
A guy named Matt. Do you know Matt, Steve? Have you looked at this yet?
I have. And Randy Geis, he sent me an email about this, and I had seen it maybe 4 or 5 days earlier. And I don't remember where, maybe John Gruber's Daring Fireball or something
like
that. There
you go. Yeah.
But I'd gone and looked at it because I own a Jot stylus, and it is very precise, and you can do a lot of really nice stuff with it. And I looked at this and thought, gee, I sold my big iPad and got an iPad mini. Now I'd like my big iPad back.
Well, just wait. You're going to get a really big iPad.
Well, probably. But I don't know.
We know he will.
But I don't know. I don't know, Matt.
He's a young guy, so, you know, he couldn't have been, I mean, by the looks of his picture, he's young. He couldn't have been with Apple all that long ago, but there's not a whole lot on here about the background of the company. And I don't know when they first introduced this, but I don't even know how much it is. I can't even tell you that yet, because I literally just discovered it this morning. So, but check it out at astropad.com.
$49.99.
There you go.
Yep.
And you can get a student educational discount if you'd like to look at that as well.
Cool.
That's not bad at all.
No, no, it isn't.
Okay, like so that. My cool thing is there's a lot of devices that will allow you to track your stuff. You know, there are things like little Bluetooth dongles you can put on your stuff. And so if somebody takes it away from the proximity of your phone, for example, the alarm goes off, things like that. And there are other tracking things. But this one really intrigued me, and it's called iTrack, I-T-R-A-Q. And the reason it intrigued me was the fact that they have gone out to the wireless carriers. It's a thing that's about the size of a credit card. It's a little thicker than a credit card, obviously, but you can hang it on stuff. You can put it in the glove box of a car. You can do, you know, anything. And essentially what it is a cellular tracking device, and it'll track anywhere in the world because it'll ping cell towers. And they've worked out something with this global SIM provider, and it's built into the cost. So you can buy one of these for $49 US, pop it into a suitcase or, you know, a briefcase or backpack or whatever, hang it on your kid, put it on your dog, whatever. And based on how frequently this device will ping the cell towers is how long the batteries will last. So if you ping the towers once an hour, the battery will last 4 months, twice a day for a year and a half. And if you ping the towers once a day, the battery will last for 3 years. And it's pretty cool.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a little large, though.
It's a little large. Expect. I was just going to say, smaller. It needs to be smaller.
Yeah. But yeah, they'll get there.
Yeah, no, the problem with the Tile and others like it is that it's, you know, it depends on Bluetooth, and that's only, what, 30 meters?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Which is not a large distance. It's roughly 100 feet. So, that's just not, you know, that large of an area. So something like this makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what I liked about it.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think we've pretty much gone over these, upcoming events, except on March 19th, Internet of Things, IoT Fuse is coming, and there's, new stuff on the website now, the speakers, and we're going to have this thing called speed mentoring, you know, like speed dating. And so that's happening. And then on the 26th,
yes.
What's happening then?
Well, you talk about it.
Mobile March, Twin Cities.
Yeah.
And ooh. Yeah, that'll be a great event.
We're looking forward to it. We've got a lot of speakers. We'll have an agenda released later this week. So, very excited about some of the presenters. The keynotes include, you know, because we know people, chief technology officer of BuzzFeed, Mark Wilkie. We'll also have representatives from Space 150. We have the thing on mindfulness, which is going to be kind of interesting as a keynote over lunch. But check it out, mobilemarch.com.
Yep. Cool. We don't know anything yet about, Treehouse Health is having that event on the 24th.
Yeah. That was just announced about fundraising, what startups need to know.
Yep.
That's a free event. There's also a Mobilize Minnesota meetup that I learned about this last week coming up on this coming Tuesday evening, which sounds interesting. And you know what? Phil Soren is going to be announcing something.
Oh, really?
I would go just for that. It's like, what? I sent an email to Phil. I said, you're the last guy I would have figured to be announcing something at a mobile meetup.
No kidding.
But something's cooking, guys. So that's a little heads up.
Well, and he's a twofer on having successful startups. That he's cashed out big time on.
Oh, God. And we all figured he's got another one in him, you know, at least I did.
Yeah.
You know, he's not that old, you know.
Well, I think he's in his mid-40s.
I think he's north of 50. He's more like 53-ish, maybe, something like that. But still, talk about a lot of energy, you know.
Well, and plus he's still money. He probably still has his teeth. So.
Yeah, good. He does. Yeah. Like most of us. No, it's.
Oh, my God.
That'll be a new segment. Does he have teeth or not?
Yeah.
So he's going to be there with a partner and making some announcement after the program, I think. So I'm going Tuesday evening at Day Block Brewing at, what is that, 11th in Washington, I think? 10th in Washington, yeah, somewhere there. Like South, Washington South.
All right.
Very cool. Very cool.
Well, that's great. I think we have reached the end of our adventure.
Say it ain't so.
It is. It is. So I want to thank everyone who's listening. And we will see you next week on...
The Minivate Gang Podcast.
Take care.
Yeah. Have a good weekend.